This episode is sponsored by Foil Sessions, the foiling app that lets you track all your foiling sports. This is Up on Foil, the podcast for everyone flying just above the surface.
Pump, carb, soar, let's foil! Good. All right. Welcome to this very special episode, another non-scheduled program. And today it's with Andy Abo. He's living in the mountains, but he's a foiler. And while I just talk about people who foil in different places, beautiful places, he has actually been there. And we didn't share the run at the exact same time, but we were at Lake Neuchâtel last week when it was really windy. And I'm super excited, Andy, to have you here. And you can share your insights in how good is downwinding on Lake Neuchâtel compared to, for example, the river or the gorge. And also what we found out when we like talked a little bit before, you were in Curno as well, so that's super exciting. Andy, we're just going to go all in on your experiences on foil. How are you? When was the last time you were on foil?
Just last week on that one big day in Lake Neuchâtel, the one that everyone's talking about. If you haven't seen it, you wouldn't think that waves of this size could even be possible on a lake. It's insane. Like, we're probably head high waves at the end.
Were you aware that the waves were going to be that big, or were you kind of surprised yourself?
Actually, I've been to Lake Neuchâtel a couple times, but I've never done a run like that before. A friend of mine has, and he took me with him, and he knows my level. So I thought, okay, if he says I can do it, let's go for it. So before that, I had probably done couple Ks at the longest, doing no shuttles, just upwind downwind with a power wing. And there I was doing 25 kilometers with the train. I mean, Lake Neuchâtel is perfect for that. And at the start, the waves were really nice, small but very nice, and then it got consistently bigger. And at the end, actually, I didn't do the whole run. I exited a little bit earlier because I was so overfoiled. And not having done it before, I was kind of getting scared sometimes, and talking to my mate Dirk afterwards, we both said we just jumped off a couple of times because we got scared. So yeah, that's how it basically was. But it was really, really cool.
Maybe you can just tell our listeners, our viewers, the shuttle at Lake Neuchâtel, the shuttle is amazing because you don't have to go in the car with a friend and they have all the logistics. You can just basically take the train.
Yeah, it's simple as. Basically, what we did, we just parked down at one of the most famous spot, San Blaise. You can just park there, and then you walk a couple of minutes up to the train station, hop in the train, and go up as far as you like. There's like a kind of a dead spot in between where the train track is a bit further away from the coast, but apart from that, you can basically choose the length of run and then just jump in. Like, we walked another 5 minutes, probably 5 to 10 minutes back down and jumped in and threw out our power wings and off we went.
So amazing. And the cool thing, I think, is that at the beginning where we started, you went to Gorgi as well, right?
Yes.
Where we start, as you said, the waves are not super high, but they're there already. You don't have to like go for a long power wing only run until you're in the bumps. You're just there.
Yeah. There's only maybe 100, 200 meters close to shore where there's no bumps. It's really simple. You just go out there and there's bumps straight away, basically.
What really gear good. Did you bring?
So, as I said, I was on a power wing. So I had a 2.4 and a 3.6. And because of the length of the run, I also took my 5, but I could have left that back home. I just wasn't sure because going to San Blaise before, I got skunked quite a couple times. Maybe not skunked, but the wind can be kind of fickle and going up and down. So I was a bit scared of ending up somewhere and just not being able to get back up. So I had those three Power Wings, the Ozone Pocket Rocket, basically, and then I had a 76-liter Sonova Carver and Unifoil Evolution 135, which was basically perfect until the last maybe 5-10 kilometers. Then it just got too big. I mean,
Very nice. Yeah, you're in that chat as well, right? And they always say, you always have to bring a five. That's like the most important, the golden rule. Just bring a five, just in case.
Actually, I'm not in the chat, but that's my learning from other places. Like I went to Lake Garda quite a bit in summer, and a couple of other spots where, I mean, powering is perfect, and if the wind's consistent, but if it just drops, you're kind of screwed. Like and as you probably know yourself, with the power wing, you need a little bit more wind to get going. And sometimes if the wind just changes direction slightly, you might still be getting up on one direction, but then maybe in the other direction, the waves are just breaking you down. So you cannot really pump your board through them because they just slow you down. So sometimes you have to suffer, but that's normally I try to at least have two, like the one right for the occasion, and then the second one just a bigger one.
I looked at the graph, the winds in 2025. There were many windy days, but of course at the gorge there were more wind days. And you've been there for 2 weeks, you said. Mm-hmm. Was that the first time at the gorge? How was it?
The first time was quite a spontaneous decision. Van broke down, so I couldn't do the camping trip I wanted to do originally. And then suddenly the idea of going to Hood River popped up in my mind, and then I just checked flights, and basically a couple days later I was gone. So I went there for nearly 3 weeks in July. It was perfect. I mean, just before this chat, I thought again what the main differences would be. And one is just the consistency of the wind. Like basically some mornings I was getting up and was actually hoping for like a lay day, because it's basically up every morning and you drive down to the river and it's on and you know, oh no. And because it's so good, you cannot not go. So like I kept doing like six hour sessions. I mean, not full on, like probably got in the water maybe 11 and then finally got out like at 5 with some short little stops in between, but basically in the water every day, all day.
That's a lot of work. That's crazy, man. And every day with the power wing?
Every day with the power wing. I think I pumped up my wing once. And I definitely wouldn't bring them again. It's just too easy with a power wing there. Like the current going upstream just helps you even more going upwind, and because the wind is so consistent, it's really easy. And also at the closer to shore, the water gets a little bit more calm. So even if you're not 100% with your maneuvers, like you just go out of the bumps to the side, do your maneuver there, and then you go back in. So yeah, power wing every day, basically.
So if I think about my like learning journey, when I had a couple of days in a row on the water, then I really got better. But you've been there almost 3 weeks. You must have like gotten way better during that time.
Yeah, I learned a lot. I started powering last year already, but I had a couple of shocker sessions and wasn't 100% convinced. Like just like I couldn't get up. Maybe my board was a little bit too small. Like I went with my wing board basically and thought, it's got to work, but it just didn't. I kind of, for a while, I wasn't sure. Like I had some nice sessions where I knew this is great, but then I had some really sessions where it was basically swimming. So it didn't persist through the whole winter, basically. Yeah, and then this year I just thought I want to give it more tries. Just need a consistent place to go to where to really learn it. Also, as soon as you start going from the wing to the power wing, you see that actually downwinding with a wing is kind of cheating, because the wing, even if it's flagged, it still pushes you. It still helps you. So I could probably do a couple hundred meters, maybe 500-600 meters with a wing. But as soon as you get rid of that wing, you realize, oh, I probably need a bigger foil, because it's just, it is quite different. So when then going to Hood River, and just going every day, within a week, I was suddenly doing 2K runs instead of just a couple hundred meters before. So yeah, the consistency and being able to do it every day, it helps a lot. And also the consistency or the consistency of conditions, because like here, one day it's like this, the other day it's small, next day it's fast, or next day is really slow. And that makes it way harder to learn, I think. Whereas if you have those consistent conditions, it's just way easier.
When you said you already started last year, there weren't that many Parawings available. Did you have a BRM?
Yes.
Or which one did you go?
Yeah, I got the BRM. Yeah.
Still have that?
No, I gave it to a friend. I now also have a Kanaha, which I have to try a little bit more. Especially for the bigger sizes. I think the Ozone is really great in the small sizes, especially riding powered up. But the bigger sizes, if you're underpowered, the big aspect ratio makes it not want to turn when you're underpowered, and the long lines also, and they're really soft, so they tend to knot on themselves. Like once you're flying, they're really nice, especially maybe if you have a kiting background, and you like, and also I think you need to use a harness with that one. Like it is made to use to be used with a harness. Because then you can really use its possibility to be ridden overpowered and just crank up wind. But being underpowered with the big sizes in the maneuvers is sometimes a bit annoying. So I'm going to dabble a little bit more with a Kanaha, I think, just at least in the bigger sizes. We'll see.
All right. We're going to talk about it because you're in Davos, right?
Yep.
And there's not really a place to downwind. You might be foiling, maybe parawinging even. We're going to talk about that later on. I want to talk about your trip to the gorge. You said that it was a spontaneous decision to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you always like had it back in your head? Like, yeah, eventually one day I'll go.
Yeah, I definitely had it in the back of my head, but nothing. Nothing actual that I really wanted to go. And then when my van broke down and I couldn't do the camping trip that I wanted to do, I had to reconsider everything. And I said, I might as well do the best out of it and just do a really cool trip. So, yeah.
You probably booked a flight to Portland. When you went there, did you take a hotel in Hood River? Did you rent a camper? How do you stay there?
I just had a car and slept either in the car or in this private campground. Like that's one thing about the about Hood River. There's not really campgrounds. There is one, but it is just next to the train station, and it is incredibly loud. Like don't even think sleeping next to it. There's basically. No, really, it's nothing compared to our trains. There's like this big diesel locks, and there's maybe four of them pulling 100 carriages, and they make an incredible sound. And the first night I slept probably 50 meters of it. And then when I finally, totally jet lagged and tired, and when I finally half asleep managed to find my earplugs, and I thought, oh, now I'm good. Then I realized, oh, the ground's actually shaking from it. So that was one night at that spot. The people were nice enough to let me go kind of, so because I had already paid in advance. That was super nice. So then basically either you have a van where you can sleep in. I had just a station wagon where I slept in sometimes. Or you find, like people who have a van, they just find their own little secret spots. Like they don't talk about those too much because they're kind of secret. There are not too many of them. And I was lucky enough, someone hooked me up with this little private campground that I could go, which was nice. Not close to I mean, close to the river, but not in visual sight. So, yeah, just a little bit, but on a backdrop.
If I think about like being on the water for 5-6 hours a day, I would need my well-deserved sleep. And if I think about like sleeping in a car, it's not too comfortable. And yeah, if you have noises just waking you up, that sounds like a terrible idea to, you know, to recover. No problem for you.
I had this self-inflating mattress and I'm used to that kind of stuff. I'm also a surfer, so I used to do that for a long time. You need tiny little things to make your comfort well enough. And I had a tent also. I slept really well. I mean, after 6 hours on the water, you sleep well. You don't hear too much.
So have you been on the south part, like Hood River, or on the other side, on Washington side?
Basically need both. There are several spots in Hood River. I mean, Hood River basically is a little village, and the river divides Oregon from Washington State. So the most famous spot, obviously, is the Hatchery. That's just west of Hood River, but on the other side. So you need to cross the bridge. And then if you go to the other famous spot further east, to Rufus, that's actually on the southern side, on the Oregon side. So you need to cross the bridges from time to time, depending on where you stay.
So you said last time we spoke that the scenery also changes. If you're like at Hood River in this area, it looks greenish, and then if you go more to the east, it gets like desert vibes.
The area around Hood River is basically like a little bit like an alpine hilly kind of very a lot lots of trees area. With it's a bit like a high. I'm not sure how the elevation itself is, but further in the backdrop, there's this higher plains, and then if the air is clear, you can see Mount Hood in the as a backdrop. I'm not sure how high it is. Something like 5,000 meters, something. Like, it's pretty high. Maybe I'm wrong. It's pretty high though. There's snow on top, even in summer. Like there's summer camps. People who have been snowboarding long enough, that they probably have heard of the famous summer camps there. Actually, I went there for a day, but I didn't go snowboarding, but just have a look at the mountain. It kind of pulled me in, like I had to go there and have a look. It's pretty cool.
Very nice.
And then to go back to your question, like if you go further east, it suddenly gets really, really arid and dry and desert-like. Like the area around Rufus is really dry. The advantage of Rufus is, first of all, there's more current, so the bumps get bigger. The wind's probably even stronger, maybe not, but it isn't as consistent, so it doesn't happen all the time. Like, you need a really good wind flow for Rufus to work. But another nice thing is there's a big gravel parking lot just next to the spot, and you can basically sleep there, like everyone's camping there. Whereas on the Hatchery, it's not allowed.
All right, yeah. Looks really nice. And the wind, probably just like west to east.
Yes, it's always the same direction. I mean, it is a thermal wind. It's basically an exchange of wind pressure from the really cold Pacific, like as in like 12 degrees cold. It's absolutely beautiful. I went there on the only 2 days where there was no wind. Like, it was still windy, but not as strong. So went there just to have a look. It's really beautiful. Like, there's basically a rainforest, but not a tropical rainforest, but I forgot what you call that up there. But it is incredible. Like, those kind of trees, you don't see them in Europe. Like, they're huge, humongous, and yeah, really beautiful. But the water is cold. It was probably 12 degrees Celsius, like really, really cold. So, and then further inland, there's the hot desert. So
there's basically an exchange of pressure between those two. And so there's always wind from the west. Sometimes it's less in the morning and then it gets stronger during the day, but very often it's already blown quite a bit in the morning. And normally, I mean, it might go down a little bit during the day or oscillate a little bit, but nothing compared to our places where it goes up and down a lot more. So it's quite consistent. Like if you go on laps with a power wing, even there, sometimes it makes sense to have a second one, because if you go on a longer one, like 2-3 Ks, the wind might be a little bit different down there. But that also depends on the board. Like back then I had even smaller boards. I needed a little bit more power to get going. So if your board's better or your foil's bigger, you might get away just one. Like loads of people just took only one.
The waves, I mean, the river is super aligned east-west. And you have the current that flows towards the ocean, obviously. And you have the wind against it. That makes the wave probably like steeper, but also slower. How is that to surf on? Is that more difficult or you had to get used to quite a while? How was that for you?
I thought it was super easy. It basically, you go slower. So it's easier to crank more turns because you still have lift. You can go quite a bit slower. And it depends a bit on the sections. Like even there, the sections change quite a bit. It's not that you have the same bumps for a couple of kilometers. Like the hatchery is quite a bit steeper and a bit more peaky. And then when you go down a couple hundred meters, suddenly it gets slightly smaller, a bit more aligned. Then the closer you go to the Salmon River, it gets always smaller, but even more aligned. So I really like that further down there as well. And then if you go further up to the tunnels or to Swirl City, actually the waves might even, again, be smaller or very peaky, kind of, I wouldn't call it cross chop, but like really small peaks that have slightly different angles. That's a bit more tricky to ride. And then compared, Rufus is a bit bigger and a little bit more drawn out, I would say. Still quite steep, but a little bit more drawn out, I would say. But also there, it really depends on like the one side of the river might have smaller bumps than on the other side. Also, one should notice on the videos and pictures, it always seems to be way bigger. I mean, not the wave size, like the width of the river. It seems quite a bit bigger than it actually is, or at least that was my impression. I was a bit astonished that it's not as big as I thought, which is not a problem, but maybe at the hatchery a little bit, because it does get really crowded. Like it is crowded. There's loads of people, loads of windsurfers that don't really understand what foilers are doing, kind of. And I used to be a windsurfer, so I understand them, but still, yeah. The windsurfers are probably the biggest hazard. Not get run over.
And yet they go in the other directions, like foilers kind usually of, go up and down, and the windsurfers exactly, go sideways. Yeah. Was there any problem at all? Also, with the boats that run through there, isn't that a problem sometimes?
It really depends. I mean, bear in mind, I've only been there once for 3 weeks, so it might be totally different another time of the year. Everything I'm just saying is just my really short time experience. There was, like in my experience, there were some days there were quite a lot of boats, and then there were hardly any on other days. I mean, the coolest one is actually the big, what do you call it in English? Is that a paddle steam or something? Like the old, it's basically in the Western. Yeah, that thing is incredible. It is so beautiful. It's all in white with those huge red paddles in the back. And I saw that one twice, like once in the hatchery, but once even in Rufus. And Rufus, I was on the water and that thing just passed me. That was incredible. That was pretty nice. Wow. But you have to be careful. Like, you have to consistently look for them, because you don't hear the ships that come. And they might not see you or not be able to stop. So you got to be careful.
All right, makes a lot of sense. You said that it was quite crowded, just around the hatchery at least.
Mostly.
How long are the runs? Like, if you do an upwind downwinder, did you just go a couple of hundred meters up into the wind, or did you go for a long time, like an hour, and then turn around?
So, I'm sure there's loads of people who do it differently. Because I basically my aim for there was to increase the length of my runs. So I even for quite a while didn't even bother too much with my maneuvers and the powering. I just went all in and tried to ace as long a run as I can. And so basically I went, like, I tried to do laps like longest 2-3 miles at the longest, probably more like 2. And that, like, if you look at the map and the hatchery, that would be around from the hatchery down to the Salmon River. And Rufus, it's about a similar run when you start from the parking lot, go maybe a little bit further up, and then go further down to a spot where then the wind gets slightly slower, wind gets slightly less, and the bumps also a little bit lower. And then there's then also at Rufus you get closer to the dam, which is kind of impressive. As you can see, the water coming out, and they change the amount of water coming through. But there's a lot of people who still do shuttles also with a powering. No, I haven't. I'm regretting a little bit that I haven't done that because I've been asked, but thing was, I felt as if most of them were way better than me, and I didn't want to be the guy that holds up the others because not being fast enough or falling too much. So I didn't do that. They mostly asked me at the start, and then once I got better, I didn't have the opportunity that much anymore. But good enough. Also, I think I'm quite happy riding upwind with a powering. Like, for me, that's I kind of like when the wind's good. I kind of like that. It's not too bad. So I was quite content doing laps with the powering.
Yeah, because if you're downwinding, you're not powering basically, because you just use it for a couple of seconds and then stow it, and then you're not powering. But how long are the runs? You know how far upwind they shuttle? Because if I look at this river, it's super long. Yes, of course you need a little bit of fetch, but I can imagine you can go for 10, 15 kilometers, or what's the longest runs you can do, you know?
I had a quick look on the map, and I think from that one tunnel, which apparently they just closed because it was dangerous, but I think that's Tunnel 4, I think, from Tunnel 4 down to Salmon River, that should be something like maybe 7 miles. I might be wrong.
Okay.
But something, 6-7 miles, maybe.
Like 12-ish kilometers?
Yeah. 1.5 times, right?
Okay.
So yeah, something like that, 1.6 around. But having said that, like, the one time where I actually tried to do a lap with a power wing further up, going close to the tunnel, the wind was quite a bit less up there. Actually, I had to swim quite a bit. Yeah, and also the bumps are quite different. Like, I was struggling a little bit up there. And after that experience, I was quite happy just around the hatchery.
Okay, all right, makes a lot of sense. If I look at the map and I hear you tell the story, then I just look at Lake Neuchâtel, like this long run, and you can do 25-30 kilometer runs, and it just gets better. Yes, the last like maybe 2-3 kilometers are not super great, but still, it's enough to just go back home. So those are shorter runs, like, compared to.
Absolutely, yeah. The runs are shorter. Although I must say, I mean, that 125 or the 20-kilometer run I did in the end, because I didn't do the last five. I mean, the bumps changed so much that I don't know if I would do that whole run under that conditions again, or at least I don't know. I mean, probably with a bit more skills, I could have kept my foil in the water anyway, but I don't know. It was it was okay at the start, then it was really nice in the center section, and then the end was just pure survival. So it probably I probably would have been quite content just doing maybe only a 10 or 15 kilometer run and maybe do that twice instead. But also, if you're doing 25 kilometers, you're kind of hurrying a little bit because you know you still got quite a way to go. So if you fall more often, it gets a little bit stressful. Whereas when you know, oh, I'm only doing maybe 5 kilometers, you can take all the time you want. So it takes the stress a little bit out of it. But yeah, I mean, definitely the goal is doing longer runs for sure. But it's not that it's some, I mean, if you do the Tunnel 4 to Salmon River run and you ace that, it's quite a long run. Also, because of the current against you, you're going slower, mm-hmm. and you do way more turns. Like compared on that Gorgier run, I was going way faster, like a lot faster, probably double as fast. I didn't have a watch or anything, but I'd say, I mean, not in the water, not speed through the water, but over ground, I was definitely way faster.
Yeah, but that's not what you feel. You feel the speed through the water and not over ground, basically. If you look to the side and you see the coast not moving, then yes, maybe. But the instant feel is pretty similar, I guess.
Yeah, it probably depends how close you are to the coast. I mean, Hood River is quite narrow, so you're close to the coast all the time. So you have a different frame of reference, I would say. But yeah.
So there, a 10 kilometer run is like a 15 kilometer run to the current. But then
I don't know.
As you just said,
something like that.
You have to pairwing back upwind or take the car, and that's the shuttling that sometimes is just it's just annoying to drive there and back again. Logistics are terrible. I did a little downwinder at the Modicum meet in the Netherlands, and it was super nice because the waves were very much aligned to the roads that went next to it, and it was not super deep, the water, so the bumps were nice and high as well. But still, to get up into the wind, we had to drive up and then like back down, so we had another car there, and it was just like a lot of driving for a run. That's why really I think like Neuchâtel with the train, that's so incredible. And if you don't want to do the whole thing, you just get out before and take the train somewhere else.
Yeah, that's what I did basically. I got out in Neuchâtel and just took the bus for the last couple 5 kilometers, and that was easy.
That's amazing. And that's maybe a difficult question. If, let's say, next week you could choose between going to Hood River with wind or having another windy week at Lake Neuchâtel, which one would you pick and why?
If money doesn't...
And let's not include the travel that you would have to do to go to the States again.
I mean, if money doesn't count, then... Hood River is pretty good. It's easier also. I mean, it's hard to tell. I think I told you before, it's a little bit like comparing apples and peas and pears. Just two different things. Can't really compare it that well. They're both incredible.
So you take 2 weeks and do both then, huh?
Exactly.
Are you going to go back to the gorge?
I might, yeah. I mean, nothing planned yet, but you never know.
All right. And then you said that you were at the Curno Foil Classic as well, mm-hmm. and we've talked about it on the podcast. How was that, and how was it different from like the two spots that we just talked about?
Curno was cool. Also, it was quite a spontaneous decision. I had about. I had 2 weeks, and I listened to Liam and Freddie's podcast where they talked about the Curno Foil Classic and said it's a bit of a community event as well. So if you don't compete, there's some socials going on and there's people just testing gear and stuff. So I thought, yeah, why not? And I have been to Cornwall before, and so I thought, yeah, why not? But last time I have been, I didn't follow back then. So I thought, yeah, let's have a look at it from another perspective. And it was really cool. I mean, I kind of missed most, you know, pretty much all the competition because they had a really good run at the start and just finished everything before it got there because they did the contest during the week already and I just arrived for the weekend. So, but still they had some funny parties in the evening and yeah, it was really good. Interesting conditions in the water though, I must say. So,
what do you mean?
That British chop is a beast. I would say, like I was struggling a little bit. Also because conditions change all the time. So it's not you're riding the same spot every day and can get used to it easily. Because it's really probable that you ride different spots every day. So and then they have really strong tides. So you have to kind of time it with the tides as well. And that sometimes, like even if people tell you, yeah, maybe go then, but then they themselves are in the water at another time and then you don't understand what's going on. Shall I go now or shall I go later? And so it's easy to mistime it. But yeah, really interesting conditions. And I think if you're a little bit more knowledgeable about the spots and understand them better, there's some great spots. I mean, they have loads of river estuaries where there's tide against wind as well. So like mini Hood Rivers kind of setups. And they also have point breaks like... I don't know if you listened to or maybe you talked to Chris. He told you about Dama Bay, which is a really incredible spot. It doesn't grow that often because it seems to it needs a really big swell and a kind of northerly wind. But if it's on, thing is pretty incredible. It's got this kind of point break running inside, and then the wind from the side, and it's kind of smaller on the inside. So yeah, that would be really cool. I nearly took part in the in a paddling race actually, but I decided in the last second that I wouldn't bother because the wind had just died and everyone was basically struggling to make it back up. Like the idea was pretty cool. They had like two gates, and one gate was just at the top where the waves started breaking, and the other gate was further on the inside. So you had to start through the inside gate, tack yourself your way back up, and then just collapse a wing by the time you go through the outside gate and just ride the waves further down. The wind was really light. I was sometimes struggling to get on foil even with a 5 meter, so I thought, wow, it's not worth it. And I also saw the other guys like doing laps, but I only realized afterwards that actually only three other guys made it, like managed to do a whole run because wind was so light. So in the end, I should have probably just tried anyway, but yeah, next time maybe. Still,
it sounds like an amazing experience there as well. And you said that the social events were also really fun. Is that something that you will attend again, like next year?
I'm not sure if I'll make it again next year. Depends on the time with holidays. What I actually wanted to try but didn't because conditions didn't align was the Solent, like the little area between the Isle of Wight and the mainland. Because I used to live on the island for a year, a long time ago. Yeah, I studied in Southampton and I lived on that island just close, this little kind of beach holiday hut from a local family, just straight on the water, basically. Back then I was windsurfing and I still remember the buoys going one or the other direction depending on the tides, and the tidal current is super strong. I guess maybe 5-6 knots maybe or something like that, like really strong. And it's quite windy, so I think with the right wind there, it should be really, really, really good for downwinding. Only that I was a bit unlucky with the conditions, like because of the Colonel Fest, I basically went first to Cornwall and then wanted to do it later on. But later on, the wind never never came from the correct directions for it to work, so it didn't happen. Maybe next time. But yeah, that spot is definitely in the back of my.
All right, very nice. And of course, we never know what happens next year. Maybe there's another sport evolving out of that foiling. I wanted to address it before. You live in Davos right now, mm-hmm. probably. Do you have snow already?
Yep.
So no more going on the water. The lake is probably drowned, right?
No, it takes a little bit more that the lake will be frozen. Eventually they use the water to make electricity, so eventually there will be a lot less water.
No more lake.
It just snowed like 20 centimeters a day ago, but it's already warm again, so that's just the first dusting. Pazin's gonna open it in 2 weeks though, but that will be one slope, I think. That's always they have okay, one okay. Artificial slope snow piece opening.
Do you pair wing on Lake Davos as well? Winging though.
I did. Yeah, sometimes I do wing a little bit, but Lake Davos is really, really gusty. Like, as in, you get a gust, you get going, and then there's just no wind for 5 minutes, and then you wait for another gust going. And because it's so small, sometimes by the time like you're slogging along, and then suddenly the gust hits, but just when you're on the other side, so you have to turn around quickly. So it's, I mean, yeah. But it's funny, like, there is quite a scene now. Back when I started, I was the first full trinet there, and basically swimming the whole time because I didn't know what I was doing, and couldn't really pump well. The wing was too small or whatever. And now there's a couple of locals that go quite a bit. Like, when there's wind, there's 5-10 people there, and that lake's tiny, so 5 or 10 people are already quite a bit.
Very nice. But for you, the winter is not that bad, right? You have a 3A shapes on Instagram, or you are 3A shapes on Instagram. Yep. What do you do?
So 3A shapes is like a little side hobby business of me, where I do custom made snowboards. Basically started out of a need for boards for myself, because I couldn't find the ones that I wanted. So what I do basically, I can change width, radius, length of course, can put in a different heel side radius on the front side. Basically kind of like a full custom snowboard that I can build.
And people can order it?
People can order it.
Or you just
it, yeah.
do them for yourself and your friends?
No, people can order it. The thing is, there's no money in snowboarding. And people don't realize that how much work it actually is, because people are spoiled by cheap labor made in China. I'm not dissing on China, if that's the way how it is, but people are just used to prices that actually don't really reflect the actual work going into it. So if I do something here, I'll have to ask a price that many people say, no, I'm not doing that. So, good enough.
It looks really nice. You're probably right. Just these boards. Do you have like your own workshop where you live, yeah. or do you have like a shared locality? How is that?
No, I don't have it where I live. I have a little double garage in Davos, and I have a CNC machine and a press, so I can make the boards in there. And yeah, I don't ride any other boards anymore. It's kind of, once you're doing your own boards, you're kind of spoiled, because you, after a while, you figure out what is good for you and what you want, and it just, there's such a difference to anything that you could buy stock somewhere in a shop. Like, I mean, one thing that many people are not aware, that basically a snowboard that is made for everyone will probably always be too stiff for a normal guy like you and me, because
really?
Yeah, because they have to make it strong enough. So if a guy of 100 kilos rides that board, he won't break it.
Yeah.
But if you're like a lighter guy, like 70 kilo, I'm not sure how heavy you are, but feel a little bit lighter, and those boards will be way too stiff. And you get used to it after a while, and then you think, oh, I need a stiff board for more edge hold, but that's actually not really true. And especially if you want to ride powder, a stiff board is kind of detrimental. Like a slightly softer board is way better in powder.
Very nice. How do you, because Hilti, you know Hilti, he's on Instagram as well. Mm-hmm. He always compares foiling and downwinding, especially on the waves, to like snowboarding in powder. Mm-hmm. Do you see the similarity as well? Is that why you like foiling as well?
Yeah, I told you when we had a little chat a couple of days ago, and I've been telling other people, it's, I was really surprised when I was in Hood River and kind of finally cracked the downwind code, or so it felt for me at least, because I've been surfing for a long time also. Like I grew up in Munich and surfing the famous Eisbach there. Like I used to be a local there. So I kind of, yeah, surfing was my main love for a really long time. So from there, I'm used to riding a board with, and also snowboarding, obviously, you're used to riding a board with nothing in your hands. And then when you're wing foiling, you have these turns, those kind of turns in your head that you want to do, but the wings gets in the way. It always pulls you somewhere. And then when you're riding a power wing and have hands free, suddenly those turns, like if you're a competent surfer and snowboarder, it translates. It translates so much. I was so surprised. I could suddenly do turns like I hadn't dreamt of doing any turns like that before. So it was, yeah. That was pretty cool. Very I can nice. Highly recommend.
Yeah. And the advantage, well, with foiling, there are no rocks. There's always enough snow.
Exactly, yeah.
That is awesome. Well, Andy, when I look at my list, I'm pretty much through it. Is there anything else you want to address, you want to tell the people?
I think we went through most of it. I mean, now I talked all the time and you didn't tell me anything about your goals year round. I actually wanted to ask you before how that last run did. I did go for you.
The last run? Well, actually, for me, it was the first real long run. I did a couple of ones. I tried with the Papel from Neuchâtel to Saint-Blaise, which was a pain. Like, I thought, yeah, it's going to be half an hour, maybe 45 minutes. And then it was 1.5 hours and me maybe 200 meters on foil. So now doing this, like, first real downwind run with the Parawing, at least from this side, was amazing. I think in the first run, like my max was like 15 minutes on foil before falling in again. And for me, that's already something.
That's quite a bit. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's fun. And I felt fine as well. I took out the camera. I was able to actually FaceTime my family and try to show them what I was doing. So yeah, I'd say that worked quite well. But the problem is now I want more, man. I want to go again. Like next time there's, it's so addictive, really. And yeah, I work as a teacher. Yeah, definitely. I work as a teacher and I cannot really just go whenever the wind is good. So it really, the stars need to align, wind, time off, and me not being injured. That needs to align. And that's the most difficult thing, I say.
But how far are you from Lake Neuchâtel?
It's not even an hour drive.
It's easy then.
Yeah, that is actually not
I mean,
the problem.
At least what I see from Jonas and Simon, they go quite a bit. So the lake is more consistent than you might think.
No, that is true. And the problem is I'm in those WhatsApp groups and there are over 120 foiler in that WhatsApp group. So there's all time, someone is always going foiling if there's wind. And you get that FOMO, and I'm just at school, like, looking at the WhatsApps, looking at the videos, like, oh, wow, these guys. But no, I'm super fortunate, man, to being able to experience it with them. And yeah, living so close to that lake, really cool. And the cool thing, and that's really, I mean, I love that lake. It's not only when there's westerly winds, when there's Pisa, the northeasterly winds, it's the same
maybe
thing. It's just the other side. Yeah, it's a little bit colder.
Yeah,
it's cold, but it's also amazing.
It's really good.
Yes, and the entrance, like the last part where with Bisa going into Yverdon, the place where you arrive, there's this canal and you can actually just go into the canal and people have gone to the train station in the canal, which again, that's so cool. And then soaking wet, going in the train. That's just amazing. That's so fun. So yeah, it's gonna be a good winter. Yeah. Looking forward to that.
All right.
But yeah, man. Really, really nice chatting to you. And I really hope that we can have a shared session soon.
I hope too. Maybe we can what's the English word for fachsimpen? And gear nerding. We can do lots of gear nerding as well.
Yeah. And I mean, going up with the train is also fun. You can only talk forever. I have like the smallest is the 27 POW, the fly surfer. I really like the POW because they are super fast. They are very much go a lot to the front of the wind window. Uh-huh. So you can also, if you're overpowered, you can manage them. But the lines are too long.
Very long, yeah.
But the 27 are not that long. So for that, it's not an issue. My 4 meter is the 777. Uh-huh. And I still have Michi's Enzis Roger, uh-huh, which is also quite nice, but 777 just a little bit lighter. And now I have the 777-54 that just arrived yesterday, so like my backup is gonna be this one.
Are the PT skin or the new one?
Yeah,
it just had a new model coming out.
Yeah, that's true. It's like specifically for downwinding, but honestly I often go those upwind downwinders. And also, like, I'm at Lake Silvaplana every summer for 2 weeks. And there, I'm just going to free ride. And I need a pairing that goes upwind well. Mm. And honestly, like, I don't see the big advantage of the purely downwind pairings. Yes, the lines are a bit shorter. Maybe the bar is a bit shorter. But I have no problem stashing the big thing. So I don't see the advantage, really.
I think it's probably a bit conditions-based. And also... What you want out of powering. Like if you want to just ride or cruise around, like on Silvaplana, there's no bumps. So you can,
yeah.
I mean, you're basically riding upwind, downwind on flat water. I mean, you can stow it and just pump, but obviously that's not the same. So there you will need something quite different than what you would want to use maybe at Hood River. In Lake Neuchâtel. And then what I realized, I think I said before, like the powerings, some are made more to be ridden without harness and maybe slightly lower on power, and some are made to be ridden really powered up. It also depends maybe if you have a kiting background, because then like the ozone will feel a bit more familiar, because feels quite similar. Just can really rip that thing upwind. Like it feels really similar. And then, yeah. So, and also, especially the board makes a big difference. Like if you want to ride a slightly smaller board, you need a power wing that can handle overpower well, because you will be overpowered a lot earlier than with a bigger board. But yeah, it remains very, very interesting. I'm really looking forward to the next iterations.
Right. It's so fun. It's really so cool. I still have that Paia, the double skin from BRM.
Ah, you got that. Nice.
I have it, but I wanted to do a podcast with Greg, but so far it wouldn't be a good episode because I used it 3 times and I was on foil a couple of 100 meters, not more. Maybe just because I wasn't out in good conditions, but also I have this 74 liter board. I'm a little bit over 70 kilos, but with the wetsuit and everything, like it doesn't really, it just floats barely. And if I have this 5'3" huge double skin and I need to like have the water drain, then it's super, it's a pain, man. It's really a pain because you need more wind to get out. And it's just, I haven't had a good session yet. And I don't want to have that conversation with him until I had a good session. So
yeah, I
might take another.
Although he's a really cool dude. I actually met him in Hood River.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was there doing what we call an apéro with Swiss guys. So like a little meet and greet in one of the bars.
Yeah.
And he was there and I had a chat with him. A really nice guy.
I'm sure he is. I just like I maybe I also feel like I would disappoint him if I was like, yeah, I have it, but I'm not able to use it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You should try it a little bit more before you talk to him about it.
Right. Yeah, we'll do that definitely. Maybe just go in all over power because it's a 5.3, and I was out with 4 meter single skin. I thought, well, if I can fly a 4 meter single skin, then the 5.3 double skin is gonna be fine. But it just wasn't.
Wasn't? Okay. Interesting. Well,
but maybe that's
where,
just
where
my,
was that?
My,
which spot?
I was out twice in Civla Plana, didn't work. Mm-hmm. And I was here
Civla
in Plana,
I mean, Civla
but
Plana,
you know, I had
so,
a long board.
The wind's, yeah, but the wind's weird. Like, I don't know. I've been power winging in Civla Plana, but I don't really like it for power winging. I think the because the air is less dense, it just, you need a bigger power wing. And I don't know. I think it's
but
not
you know, I was,
it's not a good spot for power winging, I think.
I did this big power wing comparison. I tried 18 different power wings so far. And it was all on Lake Civla Plana. And I really like it there. I think like that's my place. I love it. I've been there as a kid. It's like,
of course, it's a beautiful place. I mean, I really like it. The thing also with the power wings is not all sizes are the same. Like,
yeah,
as I said, true. For the pocket rocket, the small sizes are amazing, whereas the bigger sizes, maybe not so much. Or, not. I mean, they're still amazing, but they're harder to ride. But the small ones, it's a little bit less of an issue. But the big ones just get complicated if you're not really powered up. But Lake Civla Plana being so high with the less dense air, you kind of need to ride those bigger ones. You might not feel a power wing because you're not able to ride the small ones. But, yeah.
That might be possible. The good thing I thought was it was always flat, so I can purely focus on the feel on the wing itself. And yes, if I were to do it like Neuchâtel, I would have the power wing out for a couple of seconds and just stash it. And I wouldn't really be able to feel it that much. And there was all power wing. And I had especially a long board, like enough a buoyancy, like 123 liters, a long board, and always the same foil, always the same condition. So I can really feel the difference. And I really thought like a 4 single skin and a 5.3 double skin would be in the same wind range, but I would have needed more wind for the double skin still.
Have you tried a smaller board with the power wing?
Right now I use a 74 liter. But up there, I really wanted a big enough because I started from Sils, like the southern tip of Lake Civla Plana. So there was even a little less wind to start. So I really wanted to have enough buoyancy, really.
See, yeah, I mean, I did the same when one of my first tries. I even had I still have it. I have the what's it called? The pocket wing, the one with the two handles.
And I didn't dare to use it.
and the first time I tried it was on Lake Civla Plana with a downwind board. And man, I was swaying. I was struggling because the longer boards, they just take off so quickly. So you basically just sitting on it and holding it, you were already accelerating. So it was, and then you were running into the lines and, oh no. Yeah, that was one of my first, I think it was probably, I'm not sure if it was the first session ever, but one of the two or three first sessions on a power wing was up in Civla Plana with that little two-handle thing. And I was...
Sorry, I didn't hear you well. Did you say the first or the worst?
No, the first or the second one. And it was definitely one of the worst, yeah.
I'm just kidding. I heard you well. It's fine.
No disrespect to Sam of Hawaii 5 or how it's called, doing that cool little parachute. Still think it's such a cool idea. I mean, it was obviously the wrong conditions. Like the wind wasn't just barely strong enough. And I think, what do I have there? Like a 3, I think. And you know, Civla Plana, it's in 1,800 meters or something like that. The air is really not dense, so the wind is actually less strong, basically. And I was on a downwind board, and it was like a big foil as well that I'm not used to. So I got on foil, obviously, but then I couldn't control that big foil that I wasn't used to. Like, oh, it was a nightmare.
Terrible, but also fun. Like yeah, I don't know it was a 3 or something, but Titsu here from the from Seven Surf, the shop here in Thun, he gave me the pocket wing as well. And I just like took it out and like, well, I'm not gonna use that here because I don't think you can go back upwind with that.
I mean, I think if you got it and you're on fall, you can go upwind, but it's just the handling isn't as straightforward. I mean, I think I still have it. No, obviously I still have it. I haven't tried it since. I should probably just give it a go just for the fun of it. And I think, I mean, and you don't need, I mean, you could go upwind pretty well with a BRM Maliko version 1. I mean, that thing went
upwind. But that's a good parawing. That's still a good parawing,
yeah,
I'd say.
But the main thing for going upwind is the foil. I mean, if you know how to ride a foil and you angle it well enough, you will kind of go upwind. I mean, obviously not as much as with a pocket rocket or something like that, but you can go up.
Yeah, true. And really, it's the rider. That was one of my learnings. I gave Balz my F2, and I could go upwind, but not super well. I preferred my 777. It was much easier. But Balz could go upwind as much as I did. I on the 777 and he on the F2. So yeah, but still, it's the rider that makes
of course,
parawing a good parawing. So that's really something.
Yeah, but Balz can fall with an umbrella.
That's true.
I think that must have been late last year. But even Michi's the same. I remember. Yeah. I was in Islington. And the wind wasn't as strong as forecasted, but we dabbled on the beach anyway. He let me try his gear, and I had a Maliko. Yeah, I had the Maliko version 1, and I gave it to him. And I'm not sure what size it was. Like, no way I could get on foil, and I was on a downward board, like the F1, like not the super long one, but yeah, it was like 600-700 liters about. And a relatively big foil, and I couldn't get up on foil. So Michi went out on my gear, and he basically just stood there and pumped the board on foil just out of his legs and holding the power wing. Basically, it's incredible. What a legend!
You know what? That is super true. I mean, those guys, I love them. They're super cool. They're super helpful as well. But that's actually why I still think my reviews are kind of good. Because you see an average foiler use that stuff, that's a different approach. And if you see like a pro like them doing, they can do anything. So yeah, that's why I think it's still valuable that I try to do these reviews and whatnot.
Absolutely.
All right, doing reviews, I still have to video to edit. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Was so cool.
Nice chatting to you. Hopefully see you on the water
soon.
Super
cool. Yeah, that would be amazing. If not earlier, then maybe next summer in Silvaplana, maybe.
Yeah, hopefully this winter. Are you going the whole winter?
Yes.
Or?
Yeah, of course. No, I'm going to be a Lake Neuchâtel as much as possible. Going to get myself a thicker wetsuit though, but yeah, I'm going to be on.
All right. We'll definitely see you there.
All right, man.
All right.
Awesome. Cool.
Bye,
have a good night. Thank you very much, man.
Bye.
Cheers.